Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Sai Prakash. And dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say. And welcome to this last leg of our Thursday Live from the studios of Radio Sai on this blessed Thursday. Yes, it truly is a beautiful day, a day of great rejoicing, not only for more than a billion Indians living in this country, but for every Indian everywhere. Doesn't matter whether he's in California or Canberra in Alabama or Afghanistan or Haiti or Fiji. In fact, I'm reminded of my school days in my hometown, a little township tucked away in the forests and mountains of the Koraput district of the state of Odisha. On the morning of every Independence Day, we used to have what they call a Prabhat Feri. It is basically a patriotic version of our Nagar Sankirtan. So in this, in place of bhajans, we shouted slogans and loudly belted out one-liners and two-liners, hailing Mother India and her illustrious freedom fighters. And we would be dressed spick and span in the school uniform, or many times in complete white, and often even sport the traditional Gandhi cap. So it would be armies of students digging to the streets of the township early in the morning, filled with vigor and energy, patriotic fervor and passion, professing their love for their motherland. It was an annual affair done with a lot of exuberant enthusiasm by the youngsters, I should say. And then, of course, there would be the school assembly and talks would be given, flag hoisting would happen, and maybe a good bit of music too. And when I joined Baba's school for my 11th grade, all of this was there here in Prashantinilam too. But there was a slight difference. In fact, there was much more, especially in the years when I was a student, because Bhagwan was physically here at that point in time. And I remember when I moved to the Brindavan campus in Bangalore, we had those energetic Nagar Sankirtan in the morning, followed by inspiring talks, unfurling of the flag, and then during the rest of the day, we had value games. And all this happens even now. In fact, if you visit our website, you will find a beautiful photo gallery of the morning function of all the campuses. Do check this out. We just uploaded it about half an hour ago. And the evening of Independence Day is always marked with a musical treat, oozing with, of course, patriotic and spiritual fervor. In fact, at this point, dear listeners, let me play for you one such composition, this time done by the Radio Sai team. The lead composer is my young colleague Anirudh. He completed this just last night, really last night at midnight at 12:10. He gave me this file. We upload it on the site. Dhananjay did all the mastering. You will love this composition. So let's begin with this call of Janaganamana.
Da 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 da
So that was the offering of Radio Sai to Mother India on this sacred day. You can download or listen to this program, to this music piece again on our website, radiosai.org. So apart from music, one unique offering by the students of Babas University on this day has been also a drama in his presence. And I must say, even as you're listening to me now and to this live broadcast from the Studio Sai in the college auditorium, the final year postgraduate students are presenting a play entitled Jagriti, An Awakening. They are doing it to this entire campus. Actually, but for my present duty to host this program now, I would have definitely been there to witness that show. Because these presentations, I must say, are very different than any of such presentation you will see elsewhere on this theme of freedom or independence. These presentations, it has been my experience, always left you not just happy and joyous celebrating that we are an independent nation, but they always left you elevated, because it would always take you on a journey from independence to Swarajya. Well, some might think, what is the difference between the two? Swarajya seems like a translation of the English word independence. Well, that is what it seems, but the reality is something else. And that understanding has come from Bhagwan. Swami clearly explained what is independence and what is Swarajya. What is freedom in its truest sense? And what is it that we should be pursuing with passionate zeal? So dear listeners, this is what we will be discussing today in the next 1 hour or so. And joining me in this discussion today are three other alumni from Babas University. Aman Javeri, who is a doctoral research scholar in the Department of Management Studies here in the Prashantinilam campus. Two other former students who are probably more familiar to you, Harishankar, who after his engineering in IIT Chennai did his management degree here in Prashantinilam and currently serves in the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust, and Pawan Nandan, who did his entire schooling and a brief period of his undergraduate in Baba schools and colleges here, and then went on to do his engineering in Osmania University, later his master's in IIT Mumbai. He moved to Carnegie Mellon University in the US to do his PhD, and in the last 4 years served in GISS, which is the Goddard Institute of Space Studies. It's a division of NASA. So he was in the US and he's still currently a visiting professor in Columbia University. Fortunately, he's here in India now for a short break, and we are really grateful to Bhagwan for making all this possible this evening. So before we begin this discussion, let us first offer our deepest gratitude to Bhagwan for all that he means to us, for all that he continues to do for us every single moment of our lives, and pray that he blesses us with that strength, with that intelligence, with that perseverance and patience to become conduits of his love and his message. So with this prayer, let's move on and welcome, dear listeners, to this yet another episode of Outside, Inside and Deep Inside, our series on Thursday nights. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The time in the studios now is 8:55, and today we discuss what is freedom. So welcome, brothers Aman, Pawan and Hari to this program.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
So Hari, can we begin with you? What do you think is freedom? What do you think is the idea of freedom envisaged by the great leaders of our nation, by those who really fought and gave us our cherished independence?
Actually, before I answer that question, I think a word has to be said about that beautiful music piece which the Radio Sai team has composed.
Oh, yes.
And it so subtly brings out the fact that there is this country is so diverse and yet so united.
Absolutely.
If you notice the difference, small, small musical interludes in between were from different parts.
Exactly.
Of the
there was Harry, he was playing on the drums. He's a Westerner.
Westerner, yes.
So, it's actually, a confluence of sorts.
Exactly. I thought I'll take off from that song, because really not only did they bring independence to the nation, the freedom fighters who fought for Indian independence, they also united this country.
Yes.
It was a Herculean task. If you know somebody like Vallabhbhai Patel, 549 princely states that existed, and
yes,
he had to string together all these states into one nation.
To bring to the awareness a concept of one India.
Yes, which is something that did exist from the Vedic times.
Yes.
Bharatiya,
yes.
Concept of Bharat, Jambu Dvipa.
Yes.
So that is something that kind of got distorted. And so what we notice is they brought in unity to this country as well as independence. And in that sense, this freedom struggle has many unique aspects to it. A lot of things for us, for this generation and generations, for you know, centuries to come, to learn from what this struggle was. And one of the things really what stands out is how each freedom fighter was not only known for his patriotism, for his courage or bravery, but for several other virtues.
Mm-hmm.
And they stood for such virtues that even today we look up to the freedom fighters, we revere them for the spiritual beings that they were, in
exactly.
addition to being warriors who fought for our
country. Not just
country.
Patriots, but they were, as you mentioned, spiritual beings.
Exactly. And so many, they were spiritual luminaries while at the same time standing for the freedom of this country.
Yes.
That is a very unique
thing, yes.
And, you know, if I take the father of the nation himself, if you see, the two main values that he stood for were truth and non-violence. And if you take, say, non-violence, like, you know, the theme of non-violence was something that inspired several other leaders of such movements all over the world.
Exactly.
Martin Luther King was one of them who took the concept of civil disobedience, though Gandhiji was not exactly propagating that.
Yes.
And Mandela, who fought apartheid in South Africa, he had in fact written an article in Time about Gandhiji, and mm-hmm. he had called him the sacred warrior.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a very nice term that he used. And if you notice, the freedom struggle was not known as a struggle or you know, fight for independence at that time. They used the term satyagraha.
Yes.
So this meant, this actually signified that at the basis of this was truth. They were actually seeking the truth.
Yes, satya.
Yes. So what we should recognize is that in this freedom struggle at the background, there was something more than just the freedom of the country that was at stake.
Yes, yes.
They were fighting for the spiritual freedom of this country.
Yes, your thoughts, Pawan.
Thank you, Hari, for talking about the father of the nation. I think, like Hari was saying about the values that some of these leaders were truly representing, like truth and nonviolence. Another leader that comes to mind is Aurobindo, Sri Aurobindo.
Yes.
Many Sai devotees probably know of Aurobindo in relation to how he presaged the advent of what he called Overmind in 1926. It's interesting that Aurobindo actually was born on August 15th, 1872.
Oh, is that?
Exactly on the day we got our independence many years later. His life is very interesting because his father actually sent him off to study in England because he had a real distaste for Indian Oriental education. In fact, he wanted him to be completely anglicized. So at any rate, he studied in King's College, Cambridge. He came back. He served in the Gaikwad's Baroda service for a long time. And eventually about 1906, he left for Calcutta. to actually take part in the nationalist section of the Indian National Congress. If you look at the Congress then, there were the moderates and the nationalists. So actually he was the key force behind the nationalists, and he was, in fact at that time he propagated the view that you cannot just through moderate means gain independence. So I'm just saying all this because Aurobindo at that point firmly believed that you have to win your independence through not through passive resistance but through more active resistance. And it's interesting, years later he got tried in the Alipore jail case, where eventually you know, his life turned around. He had what he calls the Vasudeva Kutumbakam Darshan. That is, the vision of the whole world as nothing but a manifestation of Krishna. And it's not that his spiritual practice began then. It started many years back, his yogic practices. But at that point, basically, Lord Krishna convinced him that the political career that he was pursuing at that point was not the be-all and the end-all. And so at that point, he really took to more active spiritual pursuit. And I'll just say one thing, that the last thing, that at that point, he basically withdrew from active politics, and he wrote, he was a spiritual colossus, probably a philosophical and mystical colossus of the 20th century. His works are unparalleled. And it's interesting that in the end he says he came, you know, he formulated a form of yoga called integral yoga, whose aim is basically spiritual realization, that integral yoga not only liberates man's consciousness but actually transforms his nature. So here you see the word liberation used in a different context by Aurobindo, as opposed to his initial years of active resistance. He's talking here of inner spiritual realization. So this is sort of some of the things I can think about.
Yeah, I mean, he almost seemed more like a saint now.
Yeah.
As he was saying, a sacred warrior, as Hari mentioned, they described Gandhiji. So I think you find these shades of spiritual dimension in most of our leaders who fought for freedom. Anyone comes to your mind, Aman?
Yeah, you know, we're talking about great leaders, and he started with this wonderful word, Swarajya. And one leader who immediately comes to our mind is Lokmanya Tilak.
Yes.
He was the one who, we often quote him, you know, he said, Swaraj is my birthright and I shall have it.
Yes.
What is unfortunate is that, you know, from childhood, we read this in history books, and somehow we are given the feeling that he told this in the context of the freedom struggle. But if we really read his works, like the Gita Rahasya, and also a lot of biographical sketches on Tilak, we realize that from a very young age, he had a spiritual bent of mind. And when he said, Swaraj is my birthright, initially he did not mean the freedom struggle at all.
Oh, is it?
What he actually meant was, he took Swaraj as the ultimate liberation, which we generally term in the spiritual sense of liberation of the Jivatma,
Moksha,
realizing
all those,
all those things.
Nirvana and kind of.
And if you read his Gita Rahasya, he has translated the whole thing, he has given it an orientation of Karma Yoga. And for him, the freedom struggle was actually Karma Yoga, a path towards the ultimate spiritual freedom. And that is why I think it's very important for everyone to understand that many times when you talk about the freedom struggle of India, we feel that it was the political freedom that our freedom fighters were fighting for. But actually, yes, political freedom was there, but it was not the end.
It's not the end.
It was just the starting point to a much, much longer journey.
Yeah, as you mentioned this, Aman, what comes to my mind is that lofty idea of freedom, which Rabindranath Tagore put it so beautifully and so poetically. I think many of us are familiar with that poem, but I will just read out a few lines of that because it's so powerful and it's so beautiful. He says, where the mind is without fear and the head is held high, where knowledge is free, where the world has not been broken up into fragments by narrow domestic walls, where words come out from the depth of truth, where tireless striving stretches its arms towards perfection, where the clear stream of reason has not lost its way into the dreary desert sand of dead habit, where the mind is led forward by thee into ever widening thought and action, into that heaven of freedom. My country, my father, let my country awake. So it is this glorious, really glorious and lofty ideal of freedom laid down by Rabindranath Tagore and all these leaders that we spoke about in the last couple of minutes. And in fact, we can go on talking about every leader. I think every state of India, every district of India has one such leader, one such patriotic leader, and who had so much of spiritual underpinnings in their personality. So this is one idea of freedom that we get when we look at those leaders of yore. And at the same time, I remember listening to the Prime Minister of India speaking in the Red Fort in New Delhi last year on this occasion. And he said, we would achieve independence in the true sense only when we are able to banish poverty, illiteracy, hunger and backwardness from our country. This will be possible only when we learn from our failures and build on our successes. So here is one idea of freedom or independence where you're talking of helping the country get over all these maladies, be it poverty, be it unemployment, be it illiteracy and so on. So, you know, there is this lofty idea of freedom we talked about, and then there is this concept of freedom or independence where you are trying to only see that the country is free from many of the problems that it is dealing with. But if you look at the common man, if you look at an average youngster in any city, in any town here or elsewhere, you know, what would freedom mean to them? I think it would be nice if we discuss about that. If we discuss about the freedom that everyone can relate to, that everyone is dealing with every day in their lives. So can we just take that question, what is freedom for a youngster anywhere?
Yeah, so if you take a typical teenager situation encountered by a typical teenager, even the youth of today, so we see that they're just starting to begin to express their individuality. So they're exploring the world for themselves. There are some ideas about what they want to do, as opposed to till now what their parents had told them to do,
exactly.
For example. And in that expression, you know, what happens is they collide with their parents' expectations of what they want them to do. And at that point of time is when they say, you know, my freedom is getting curtailed. I am not able to express myself.
Yes.
So for that them, is at their own personal level, they're seeking that kind of freedom, that kind of space.
Basically,
for
to put it very simply, freedom for them is I should be able to do what I like to do.
Exactly. Which is I think a very generic. You know, you will see the same theme being repeated in several different contexts. Like, can you think of Pavan, like in any other area where this concept of freedom is what I like to do.
Yeah, Aman wants to share something. Yeah, Aman, go on.
Yeah, you know, just because we are comparing and contrasting two views, you know, one a lofty ideal and the other the ground realities. I think I'll probably pitch in for the latter, the lofty ideals. And, you know, just a few thoughts that come to me. Even before we talk about freedom, I am reminded of this wonderful quote that is given by one divine master. And he says, before you ask for freedom, first think what true freedom actually is. And I think at some point in time, each one of us has to sit back and really think about this question. Extremely pertinent. And my personal experience, whenever I face such questions, I think one source that I generally always go back to are some of our scriptures or the Sanatana Dharma. Yes, they are extremely lofty, but somehow lot of us have found solace in these scriptures. So my worldview of this idea of freedom is mainly borrowed from the scriptures. And to understand this worldview, we just have to step back a couple of steps and see the entire macro picture. Right? When we say we want freedom, what are we actually talking about? At a very, very deep level, each one of us wants to be complete. For many of us, in fact for all of us, if we really go to the root of it, freedom is completeness.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we yearn for completeness? Because at some level we feel that we are incomplete. Where does this incompleteness in turn come from?
Can you give some examples, Zaman?
Yeah, I'll just give me one minute and I'll share an example with you.
Yeah.
I was saying, where does this incompleteness come from? It comes from the two innate feelings that are present in every individual. That is craving and aversion. So let me give you an example here.
Yeah.
Right? When you're a small child, you see that some of your friends have a toy. Let's say a small car.
Yes.
The moment we see that car, a desire arises in us. And that moment, we start feeling a sense of incompleteness. And we feel that if we have that car, we'll feel complete, we'll be complete. This innate desire of being complete does not change, although the desires keep on changing.
Yes.
I grow up a little bit, I see some of my friends having a cricket bat, I want that bat. I grow a little bit elder, I see some of my friends going to the best universities, I want to go there. I want to have a family later on in life. I feel a family is going to give me completeness. Power, authority, position, money, wealth,
yeah.
Right? At every step in our life, we feel that, yes, let me fulfill this one desire. And I will be complete. Yes, there is a sense of completeness, but that is only temporary. And that is why desires keep on gnawing at us. And that is why the scriptures tell us that the trick lies in not actually fulfilling those desires, but in realizing that freedom comes from independence. That independence from what? From the desires themselves.
Yeah, true.
We need a little bit of clarification over here, I think. So I'll just throw out a question. Even as you're speaking, I just looking back at all the, different struggles for freedom that have taken place, even going back to the French Revolution or any struggle where, we are fighting for freedom of expression. Okay. So what I see, Aman, there has been so much progress in civilization, even personal progress or progress in society so far has depended so much on this insufficiency or incompleteness as you talk about it. I need more money in my life. So I go out and work that much harder.
Yeah,
so isn't this something that is to society? Or?
Yeah, Hari, I think what you're bringing, the point that you've raised is definitely valid. I mean, all the achievements that we see in the world today, be it scientific or otherwise, I mean, any field or be it sports, anywhere, it's only because of that need to complete themselves doing that.
All freedom struggles have been about, let me be able to do that. Liberty to be able to...
Yeah, if everyone were to be desireless, then, there would nothing be happening in this world and no one would really want to do anything.
Yes.
If everyone felt all the time fully complete, then there would be no activity. But,
For example, I talk about economics.
Yeah.
See, why do we fight for a free market or, deregulation of markets? It is towards progress. So I'm struggling with this. Why are we talking about something that is not this definition of freedom?
What comes to my mind is this, Hari.
Yeah.
I think desires is not wrong. It's not wrong to have desires.
Okay.
I think where the problem is to be driven by them recklessly. Let me give you an example.
Okay.
Now, suppose it is 10:30 in the night.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to eat one ice cream. And I'm very clear about which brand of ice cream I want to eat.
Okay.
So it is 10:30 in the night, but I don't care. I want to eat that ice cream, so I get out of my home. I pull out my car, and even though traffic is so bad, and it is 30-minute drive through that horrible noise and pollution, I go, I stand in the queue for that food joint. I have my ice cream, so I have burnt 30 minutes of my time, I have burned 20 rupees of petrol, and I stand there, I have another 10 minutes I have given waiting for that my turn to come to, and then I pay another 30 bucks, I have this ice cream. So you see, just that desire to eat an ice cream came, mm-hmm. and I was completely taken over by that.
Okay.
Completely taken over by that.
Right.
Now, and I think that happens all the time. You want to read a particular book, you want to see a particular movie, something the eye wants, something the ear wants, mm-hmm. something the tongue wants, and you're completely all the time driven by that. I think that is where the actual problem is. The problem is not that you should not have desires. The problem is you should not be driven then. It should be such that suppose there is a desire, you should be the master to decide whether you want to fulfill that or not. I think you should not, the problem comes, to put it very simply, mm-hmm. you should not become a slave. You are actually saying you are free because you can do what you want, but actually what is happening is you are actually becoming a slave of your senses. What do you think, Pavan?
Absolutely. I think what you are driving at is, does doing what you like lead one to be happy or miserable? I mean, that's the larger question, it seems to me. Being a scientist, I like to look at data. Do we have some data that supports whether you're happy or miserable, being free?
Yes.
To do what you like. I just happened to come across this particular data set. They seem to have been doing it for the last few years. And then other such projects, so feel free to look them up. But the one I looked up is called the Happy Planet Index. Happyplanetindex.org. And the question, one of the questions they want to really ask here is, are the happiest countries really the freest ones? When you talk of free countries, you mostly think of Western countries, America, UK. The evidence doesn't seem to point in that direction, though. Actually, the 2012 Happy Planet Index rankings, the happiest countries being listed first, so on in a descending order. The first one is Costa Rica, the second one is Vietnam, third one is Colombia, fourth is Belize, El Salvador, Jamaica, Panama, Nicaragua, Venezuela, Guatemala, Bangladesh, mm-hmm. and 12th on the list is Cuba.
Right.
And then 16th is Pakistan. Actually, you wouldn't think they would rank so high in the happiness index. Right. And then 32 is India. And actually, at 41 is UK. And at 105 is the USA.
Oh, my God.
So, if you think of a country with which the United States had, long-standing problems and still continues to, is Cuba. And it's ranked 12th on this list. Mm-hmm. And the United States is ranked 105th. So, and just out of curiosity, I looked up what actually they're trying to measure here. They rank countries on how many long and happy lives they produce per unit of environmental input. So that is how many happy people are they able to produce who live long enough without damaging the environment. Mm-hmm. And so what you see really is apparently Cubans are happier than Americans. And it seems to be, again, counterintuitive. You would think that Cubans would be miserable compared to Americans, but it seems to be exactly the opposite. And I just, I read one of the comments by one of the supporters of this project, Zach Goldsmith, who happens to be a conservative member of parliament from UK, bear in mind, a conservative MP. What he says is that basically everyone accepts that gross domestic product alone cannot tell us anything of substance about how we're actually doing as a species. Mm-hmm. It tells us nothing of the state of our planet or the well-being of its people. It's simply an indiscriminate measure of economic activity. Therefore, the HPI, or the Happy Planet Index, is a very good step towards developing alternative indices of happiness or freedom. And so I found this interesting, that a conservative MP is thinking along these lines, that freedom, GDP don't seem to correlate much, you know.
In fact, just to add a point,
yeah.
If we see in the US and all the developed markets today, there is a new trend where all these economists, many of them who won Nobel Prizes, they are transforming the way economics is taught. And they have started new institutions. Joseph Stiglitz is one of those. And they are saying that the economics that we teach in our school and colleges actually has no fundamental basis, right? And the exact point of the GDP is clearly reflected in their thought process also. And they are trying to come up with new ways of measuring success and, of course, freedom, happiness, and all these other metrics.
It kind of brings to mind, you know, a few years ago, the king of Bhutan, Jigme Singye Wangchuk. So he had proposed this GNH, Gross National Happiness, as a measure of how a country is doing. And listening to, you know, what the reply that you gave and the inputs from Pawan and Aman, what is coming to mind is that this concept of freedom, that to be able to do what I desire or what I like, it brings with it, you know, certain deficiencies. Like as he said, it is not enough that my desire gets, what shall I say, satiated fulfilled once. That desire comes, it crops up again and again and again. And as he said, we are a slave to that desire. So again, you know, that what do we say, you know, that we are trying to be free. At the same time, we are landing more and more into the slavery of the senses. Like that is something that I got from what Bishu said. And similarly, from what you said, what I got is this, that in the sense that, you know, how much ever you satiate a desire and a desire comes again and again. What about unfulfilled desires? You know, we see many such
I mean, there is frustration at some point after you go on fulfilling your desires because it is never ending.
Yes.
And you never, that peace or that happiness is so elusive.
Exactly.
And it is the same, and at a different level when the desires are not fulfilled, again there is frustration, there is misery. Exactly. Isn't that what you're saying, Hari?
Yes. I remember Swami used to say the same thing, you know, when this used to come up, he used to say the same thing, that desires by themselves, it's natural to have them. But what really brings that misery is that expectation. And Swami used to put it very simply, used to say, appointment unte disappointment ostundi. The moment you create an appointment, that is to say an expectation, it is natural that there will be a disappointment. Very simple way. So what I'm getting is this concept of freedom that we have, that we have worked with so far, may not be sufficient. It has worked wonderfully so far as to bring certain kind of results. The progress that we see today and all that has come out of this concept of freedom, that we have to be able to do what we desire. You know, we have worked for that. And we are now looking, exploring as to, is there a concept of freedom that goes beyond this and also brings us happiness along with success?
Yes.
Is that what we are looking for?
Exactly.
Before? Okay.
Exactly.
Wonderful. Okay.
Because the classic case, as you was mentioning, Western countries, you have so much of so-called freedom, but they are so low in the happiness index. So what is it that can really give us freedom and happiness?
In fact, even if we see the world history, we'll find that after every successful revolution, there was no guarantee of happiness.
Right.
If you look at the Bolshevik revolution, if you look at the communist revolution, if you look at the revolution in India, all revolutions thought, revolutionaries thought that after the revolution we are going to have that utopian world.
Yes.
But it never happens. And the word you rightly said was elusive. I think that's the key word.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
and,
go on.
We have to now turn towards what the spiritual personages of the world over have been talking about. And something again is beginning to bothering me about this thing. Kind of paradoxical situation that we have over here. You look at any spiritual discipline, they look at curtailment as almost a very necessary
restraint.
A restraint as a very necessary component of our spiritual practice. If you look at Swami, he used to talk about ceiling on desires.
Yes.
Right, which is something maybe some economists would be horrified by by this. And any spiritual practice all over the world, we keep, this is a recurring theme of restriction, of discipline, you know. And if I take this teenager's example, right? So we have seen what Swami says is the dharma of a student. So Swami says the dharma of a student is to obey his parents and to do his studies, concentrate on his academic pursuits. And if you look at the teenagers of today's society, it would horrify them to see, you know, that how far, I mean, if you look at our own lives, so many times we've been so far away from this ideal. And again, we see it seems to be so restrictive. Yes. Whereas a teenager would actually like to go out and, you know, yes, enjoy himself and definitely go against his, rebel against his parents' word and not stick to his books. So, I would like this, you know, burning question, yes, inside me to get resolved.
Yeah, so basically you are saying that, you know, it seems like what the spiritual personages are saying about freedom is some sort of restriction, some sort of, the concept of dharma comes in actually.
Yeah, it flies in the face of this definition of freedom itself that we are talking about. So how, what is the concept of freedom according to spirituality?
Even if we leave aside the question of spirituality for a moment, let's start thinking about worldly things.
Okay.
Okay. A 12th standard student, he wants to enter the IITs or give, you know, somebody graduating wants to give a CAT examination. He has to prepare for that, right? How much discipline is he going to implement on himself? He sees his friends playing outside, but he doesn't go. He puts a limit. He curtails his own freedom for the higher goal of, let's say, getting a good seat in a good university.
Exactly.
Right. So, you know, my perspective is that for worldly things, if you have to put a full stop on your freedom for some point in time, just imagine the kind of effort we have to put in for spiritual goals.
I think Pawan knows it well. He did a lot to get into the IITs.
And so does probably Hari, who...
I do get what you're talking about. In any sphere of life, really, yes, if you have to achieve a certain amount of success, you do have to, you know, curtail your desires, give up something, you know, as he said, if you have to put in a certain amount of hard work, and that calls for a certain amount of sacrifice in some other areas.
Yes. So what we are saying is, even for physical pursuits, you have to sacrifice, you have to have some restraint, you have to have some curtailment of your desires and of the different things that you want to do.
Exactly.
And we are saying that if this is what we have to do for physical things, for a lofty idea like freedom, which is actually a spiritual concept, you have to...
apparently you have to curtail your freedom.
Yes, yes. But you know what comes to my mind is, I mean, this seems... seems logical or whatever, but it's not a very fun thing, you know. Freedom is all about fun, and when we are talking about freedom, we are all the time talking about taking away from people the things that they want to do. We are somehow it feels like we are taking away the fun out of life.
Yeah, Bishu. And one thing that comes to mind is, you know, Sam Sandweiss's initial reactions of the culture in the ashram and what he expects of students. I remember in his some of the initial chapters of his book, The Holy Man and the Psychiatrist, he talks about when he first, one of the first times he came to Puttaparthi, he sat in the bhajan hall, and he was just coming to grips with Swami's concept of discipline, what he expects of young men and women, the discipline in the physical, mental, and spiritual aspects of their life. And keep in mind that Sam Sandweiss is a Western psychiatrist. He has a very different notion of what freedom is. Freedom is fulfillment of desires, as we were just talking about. And that's typically, even now, the standard view in psychology and psychiatry is that you get happy by fulfilling your desires. It's still the most typically held view. So from that viewpoint, here's a psychiatrist sitting in front of Swami and hearing about how, you know, you need to be disciplined, you need to be very focused at what you do, you shouldn't be doing whatever you like. And, clearly he was developing an aversion towards those teachings, if I may put it so. And to the point that he really said, you know, this is not going to work for me. And I read this book a while ago, so this is what comes to my mind, is that he really was very dejected hearing that the only way to become free was to be disciplined and things like that. And as these thoughts were reaching a crescendo in his mind, suddenly Swami appears in front of him in the bhajan hall, in a flash. But as he was thinking such thoughts, Swami appeared right in front of him and gave him the most beautiful smile and threw a candy at him. Mm. And he says at that moment, and subsequently upon thinking through things, it sort of dawned on him and he realized how... following Swami's teachings of discipline, of spiritual progress, practice or sadhana as we call it in India, actually leads one to this freedom, to what we would call spiritual freedom, which I think you all will explore in more depth.
Yeah, I think I'll want Aman to share here something about what happens in the hostel, because in the hostel, you have this environment where you have plenty of rules.
Yes, yes.
Right from the bell in the morning to for morning prayer to the bell in the night.
Yes.
Life is all about rules, all about following to certain time schedules, routines, do this, don't do this, go here, don't go here, you know, at this point, right. Get up at this time, sleep at this time. I mean, How do boys take this?
Actually, I'll just start with one quote of Swami which I just recollected. Mm. And I read somewhere, I think in Satya Sai Speaks, where Swami says, what is the difference between a worldly life and a spiritual life? And Swami goes on to explain that a worldly life appears to be an elixir in the starting, but turns out to be poisonous. Mm. As a spiritual life appears to be poisonous, but eventually turns out to be the elixir of life.
Mm.
And if you really see our lives in the hostel, and I say this with experience after having stayed in the hostel for so many years and also having stayed outside, because I did my engineering from Bombay University and I've seen the typical student life outside. Yes, for those couple of years when you are studying as a student, students come and ask us, brother, what is this? For everything there are rules. Yes, you have to wake up on time. In fact, even to the extent of going to mandir, students are expected that they walk in lines.
Yes.
And students come and tell us, brother, we don't even have the freedom to walk the way.
I mean, university students, yes, school students,
these are not
understand.
School students, right? These are university students. But then, invariably, when these students pass out, they come back to us. And with one common feedback with which they come is that the discipline has somehow ingrained in their DNA a sense of adaptability and resilience, which really makes them stand out vis-a-vis their peers. And that is one ability that they have not been able to find in any of their colleagues from institutions outside. And then they come back and tell us, brother, today when we look back at our lives and we see that the discipline with which Bhagwan has imposed on us, which we thought initially was curtailing our freedom, today it has freed us from insecurity, from fear, from anger. They don't know how it happens, but the system is so beautifully designed that that is the final outcome. I'll just quickly narrate a very, very common quote of Swami, which Swami so many times has even given in his discourses. Swami says that when you sow a sapling, you have to put a fence around it, because the goats and the cattle will come and eat it. But the moment the tree grows, the fence protects it, and the tree and the sapling grows into a tree, those very cattle will come and take shade under it. And I think that is the essence of curtailing freedom in at least in Swami's system.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and this contrast that I'm seeing in the two streams of thought that have come so far, I can very easily title it with Ashram versus Amsterdam.
Okay, Hari.
This is a contrast, because Amsterdam, I mean, with all respect to that city, it's a very beautiful city. At the same time, it is a dream destination for those who love a permissive society. And the antithesis of that would be the ashram, with all its discipline, with its emphasis on sealing on desires and maintaining a very disciplined life. And What we can see very clearly delineated over here as a concept of freedom that we have explored so far is at the level of the body and the mind.
Okay.
The freedom that we seem to be progressing towards right now is something that goes beyond the body and the mind, and in fact decreases our dependence on the body and the mind. It is as if we are saying that we, the person we are, has an existence that is apart from the body and the mind. And typically, this is what, you know, Swami used to say, you are not the body and you are not the mind.
Yes.
And I think we are slowly approaching, getting some clarity on what is this freedom that is apart from the body and the mind.
Exactly. And in fact, I can very much relate to what Aman said and what Hari, you mentioned, because and Aman was talking about the hostel, you know, and you mentioned about ashram, and I was thinking about the life in the ashram.
Exactly.
And in fact, many times, you know, people come to me and say, you know, they feel pity that, you know, you are staying in an ashram and you're working in, you know, you're not staying outside and you're not really making all that moolah outside, or are not having that fun outside, living in a metro. And but actually they don't know that actually I feel I'm living in the happiest place on the planet. Because, you know, where will you find such an environment? I can go on and on, but I was very clearly able to draw the parallel between the hostel and the ashram.
Right.
You know, anyone else would think that I'm leading a life of sort of curtailment and, you know, constriction, but actually the peace and freedom you experience is phenomenal here.
Yes.
And that is because, as you mentioned, it is so much related to the spirit. And if we see Bhagwan, in fact, he was the greatest example of this.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's this wonderful experience that I heard from one of my colleagues who had been with Bhagwan, fortunate enough to be with Bhagwan for the Kodaikanal trip in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And because Hari was talking about our identification with the spirit and not so much with the body and mind, you know, Bhagwan has, his life is his message, and, you know, we can learn everything from him. And this particular experience shows how we can learn from Swami, how we should relate with ourselves. One of our students, apparently Bhagwan was not eating to the liking of all our boys, and they felt that Swami is not eating enough. And one of the students took courage and he went to Swami and said, Swami, you are not eating, you will become weak. And the moment Bhagwan heard this, he suddenly flared up. Of course, Swami doesn't flare. Apparently, he flared up. And he said, who will become weak? And then one of the brothers who was pushing Swami's chair, he said, Swami, he's saying that the body will become weak. And then Swami said, yes, yes, the body will become weak, but I will not become weak. I think this is an excellent example of how moment to moment Bhagwan was showing us his teachings, how to implement his teachings in our daily lives.
Right. And we can see that, you know, from what this experience tells me, is that a truly free individual is one who is aware of his existence as being beyond the body and the mind. At the same time, you know, a lot of us, we tend to think that this is still a very abstract concept. And the reason why we think it is an abstract concept is that we are really not seeing that it is at work at different points of time in our lives.
Yeah. Can you explain that, Hari?
Yes. You know, taking off from the example that Aman had given of students who have to study hard in order to pass an exam. Or let us say there is a musician who is trying to achieve mastery over, say, the violin that he is playing. Now, you notice that when a student wants to sit down and open his textbook, it is at exactly that time that his mind starts telling him, giving him the various alternatives that are available to him other than his textbook. So it tells him which, you know, the latest movie where it is being played, or there's a nice novel that is lying there on the bed, ready to be opened, or there's some nice snack that he wants to eat, but the mind is giving him every other input other than that you have to study.
Yes.
Right? And yet, we see that there are people, the achievers, those who achieve, are at that moment, they're able to tell the mind,
yes,
that quieten.
Yes.
There is something to be done. There's a task at hand.
Yes.
And they set all these thoughts aside and they're able to open the book and actually study.
Yes.
Or if we take the concept of dharma, which Swami says, So that every time that we stay in the realm of dharma, that every time we practice dharma, we are asserting our independence over the body and the mind.
Exactly.
Because the body and the mind may be giving us very different signals or very different input about what we should be doing at that moment. However, we are able to quieten, kind of instruct the body and the mind, no, this is not what you should do.
Yes.
And what I want to say here is that, we are not really present or aware of the fact that we are doing this all the time. Which
yes.
tells us that we are in fact apart from the body and the mind. And it is to our advantage.
We have to live, continue Hari. Yeah.
It is our advantage to become aware of...
Yes, that's exactly the word that I was coming to.
Yes.
That thing of constant integrated awareness.
Awareness, yes.
And Swami was an embodiment of that.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely, Bishu. In fact, if here was a being, Swami, who for all that, I can't think of anybody who's ever seen Swami in any other state but absolute cheerfulness.
Yes.
I mean, he was the embodiment of all the virtues of this world. And no matter what, whether people heaped praise or heaped abuse on him, which was all the time, he seemed unaffected, that sort of being unaffected at that level all the time in your life, every single moment of your life is only possible for God, so you have to conclude, looking at this being, knowing nothing else, that
yes.
this was somebody who lived in that state 24
yes.
cross 7 for
yeah.
86 years of his life.
Yes.
And so you could see it in every single
yes.
day, every single darshan,
Yes. And he lived that life to show us that we too can do it.
Exactly.
And there was a whole purpose of him saying that his life is his message and leading such a life.
Otherwise, we could say that this is possible only for God.
Yeah.
And it is not a state that is accessible to us.
Exactly. Exactly.
So,
in fact, I was listening to a beautiful discourse that Bhagwan had given on Independence Day in 1985. And where Bhagwan talks about Gandhiji.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami goes on to say that, these days people enjoy their holidays, be it Gandhi Jayanti or, the days when we sort of eulogize Gandhi. And Swami says they talk about Gandhi, and they end up drinking brandy. That's all that they do.
Right.
And Swami said, if you're a true follower of Gandhi, Swami said, you should have what Swami said, the in Gandhi, Swami said, is that the Shakti. He said, you should
fantastic.
Be one who is propelled by the Atma Bhava, Swami said. Gandhiji was someone who had that Atma Balam, which is the soul force, which we are saying, which is beyond the body and the mind. In fact, I was a few days ago reading the autobiography of Gandhiji, My Experiments with Truth. And he narrates a very beautiful thing and very powerful thing, actually. Gandhiji says how sometime around 1906, when he was in South Africa, he decided to take this vow of brahmacharya.
Mm.
And, which is absolute celibacy. So even though till then he has been wedded to a monogamous ideal, ever since his marriage, but now he felt that he wanted to observe brahmacharya even with respect to his wife.
Mm.
And partly because he felt that it was becoming increasingly clear to him that leading a completely family life, rearing children and so on, was becoming inconsistent with public service.
Right.
And this was a time actually Gandhiji was very much involved in the Zulu rebellion which had happened in Natal at that time. He actually wanted to help the government, so he actually developed his ambulance corps and he helped the government there and all that. And so he was trying to help all this injured and the people who were injured and ignored. And this is what was going on at the physical level, but at the back of his mind, this wow was what was going on in his mind. And he says it was at this time that when he was doing this public service, that this whole concept of taking this vow became more and more intense.
Mm-hmm.
And it really grew and it became more clear to him that this is the path he has to take. And he says, I realized that a vow
far from closing the door to real freedom, was actually opening it.
Right.
Up to this time, he says, I had not met with much success because the will had been lacking. Because I had no faith in myself and I had no faith in the grace of God. And therefore my mind was being tossed on a boisterous sea. And he says, I realized that by refusing to take a vow, what we are doing is we were allowing ourselves to be drawn to a temptation.
Right.
And to be bound by a vow, he said, was like making a passage from libertinism to real monogamous marriage. And he went on to add how many times, you know, we say that, you know, I don't want to really be bound by a vow, you know. I believe in effort. I will make the effort, you know, but I can't be really be bound by a particular thing, a particular, such a strict thing as a vow. And he says, this is only the mentality of the weak, Gandhiji says. Because what basically you are doing is you are allowing, it just shows a subtle desire for the thing, which is actually to be avoided.
Actually, from what you said, I remember a story that Swami used to often tell us students and even in discourses. I think it really makes it very clear what is the freedom that Swami was talking about. So he gives the example of these monkeys. The monkey traps actually that are set by people in South India essentially consists of a coconut and some very delicious thing that is kept inside. So what happens is that the monkey puts its hand inside that and it tries to grab what is inside the coconut, that hole.
Yes.
And when it grabs, it suddenly finds that it is unable to take its hand out.
Yes.
And there is... We as outsiders, somebody, a bystander who's watching it, could have instructed that monkey, you know, just let go of what you're holding inside that coconut and your hand will become free.
Yeah.
So whereas the coconut, you know, the monkey is so totally confused that its concept of freedom was to actually reach for, to be able to reach for what is inside the coconut and hold on to it.
Yes.
But its predicament is exactly the same as... the man of today's society.
Yes.
Totally frustrated, unable to make out why it is trapped, even though it was able to reach for what it desired.
Yes. Yes.
And then Swami, as the bystander, is telling us, all you have to do is let go, and you will then know what true freedom is.
Exactly. And in fact, Gandhiji goes on to say that. In fact, he says that, you know, many people say that, how can I take a vow? Who knows, tomorrow I might change my thinking. Tomorrow I might have a different point of view about life or about that particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Gandhiji says, this only means that you lack clear perception that a particular thing has to be renounced.
Right.
You don't have clarity. That's all it means. And then he goes on to say, after he took this vow of brahmacharya, he says, the freedom and joy that came to me after taking the vow has never been experienced before.
Mm-hmm.
And he says the vow is such a sure shield against temptation. And in fact, it is after this period that, you know, Hari was mentioning about Satyagraha.
Yeah.
It was after this period that he says the concept of Satyagraha just dawned on him. It just came to him spontaneously. One morning, and that was the time actually the foundation for the Satyagraha movement happened in his mind. It just sort of, the concept got settled in his mind. And then he later just makes a few more comments. He says that, you know, brahmacharya is difficult, but it is always, if once you start practicing that, he says, once you take a vow like that, every day he says, revealed a fresh beauty to me. Every day I experienced a fresh beauty in it. And then he ends that chapter saying that yes, it is by no means easy, because curbing the mind is more difficult than curbing the wind.
Mm-hmm.
But he very clearly says, let no one think that it is impossible just because it is difficult.
Right.
In fact, it is the highest goal, and therefore it is no wonder that the highest effort too is needed to attain it. And finally he says, after coming to India, after he returned from South Africa to India, he realized that to practice this vow was impossible through human effort. But those who desire to practice this should not despair, provided their faith in God is equal to their confidence in their own effort.
Wonderful, really.
It's basically he's telling what Bhagwan always said, you know, you should have that self-confidence. Swami always said, you first have faith in yourself. Faith in yourself and faith in God. And this is what this beautiful episode brings out, that self-confidence, that capital S, is so important.
Great. And actually, if you, one more way of distinguishing these so-called two kinds of freedom that we're talking about, is that when Swami used to say that, we say, I want peace.
Exactly.
So Swami used to say that if you could substitute peace with freedom, so I want freedom. So in Swami's words, you have to give up the I and you have to give up the want, and that is when truly freedom is available to you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. In fact, just, you know, when we are talking about self-confidence, what came to my mind is something that Swami Vivekananda said. And in fact, this year is the 150th birth anniversary of Swami Vivekananda. You have the celebrations going on all over India.
Okay.
And in one point, you know, when he set up the monastery in the Himalayas, Vivekananda called it the Advaita Ashram. And when he put down the principles for this ashram, he said, in whom is the universe? Who is in the universe? And who is the universe?
Can you repeat that?
In whom is the universe?
Okay.
Who is in the universe?
Okay.
And who is the universe?
Okay.
In whom is the soul? Who is in the soul? And who is the soul?
Okay.
He says, to know him is knowing the entire universe and knowing that you are that self. That self with that capital S that we are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, this understanding alone extinguishes all fear and brings to end all misery and leads to infinite freedom.
Fantastic.
Really.
And then he goes on to say that this concept of Advaita, which is basically the oneness of all beings, is the only system which gives unto man complete position of himself.
Right.
Complete position of himself and takes off all dependence and its associated superstitions, thus making man brave to suffer, brave to do, brave to achieve, and in the long run attain absolute freedom.
I think this has really been a very illuminating discussion for all of us. You know, to we took off from what we normally see as freedom, as being able to do what I like. That is a freedom that all leaders have fought for. And we distinguish that this is a freedom that is actually the freedom for the body and the mind.
Yes.
And as such, as this concept is insufficient, because although it works up to a certain extent, we see that it leads to all this frustration, the stress that we see. And the spiritual path is where we see the real freedom that we are truly seeking, you know, that we
as
human beings are truly seeking, is something that is to be seen in the spiritual path.
True freedom, as Swami Vivekananda says, is complete possession of oneself.
Yes.
And in fact, that really brings to what Bhagwan said on that Independence Day in 1985, as referring to earlier. In fact, Swami very clearly mentions what is true independence there. And I thought maybe we should listen to a small clip of that. That will sort of summarize whatever we have discussed till now.
Okay.
Independence Day ante em din artham? What is the meaning of the word Independence Day?
Dependent day, itarulu yokka swadhinamlo undatam.
The one who is under the care and under the protection of another person, he is a dependent.
Leka anadiri persone kaadu, itarulu yokka vyaktulu yokka swadhinam nande kaadu. Deni endu kudanu oka dani endu vasamga lekunda undatam.
A person who is dependent on not necessarily other persons, but any circumstances.
Dependent day, parulu yokka aadhinamlo undatamu.
The one who is under the control of someone else is dependent.
Independent te evvari swadhinamulunda lekunda undatam.
The person who is free from the control of everyone is independent.
Kanuka depend kaakunda independent. Ee vidhamainatundi danini pondatame swatantramu annaru.
Independence or freedom is freedom obtained from depending upon others.
స్వతంత్రం అంటే ఏమిటి?
What is the meaning of freedom?
తంత్రం అనగా ఆత్మ.
తంత్రం refers to ఆత్మ.
స్వాతంత్రం అనగా ఆత్మను అనుసరించటమే, ఆత్మ స్వాధీనము కావటమే స్వతంత్రము అని దీని యొక్క అర్థం.
Following ఆత్మా and coming under the control of ఆత్మా, this is freedom.
పరాధీనం దుఃఖం ఆత్మాధీనం సుఖం అన్నారు.
ద వన్ హూ ఈజ్ అండర్ ద కంట్రోల్ ఆఫ్ అదర్స్ హీ వుడ్ బి సబ్జెక్టెడ్ టు సఫరింగ్ అండ్ సారో. ద వన్ హూ ఈజ్ ఫాలోయింగ్ ఆత్మ హీ వుడ్ బి ఫ్రీ.
తంత్రము అన్నారు, నీ హృదయాన్ని నీవు అనుసరించు.
దట్ మీన్స్ ఫాలో యువర్ హార్ట్.
ఈ హృదయమే నీ గురువు.
యువర్ హార్ట్ ఇట్సెల్ఫ్ ఈజ్
ఈ హృదయమే నీ దైవము.
యువర్ హార్ట్ ఈజ్ గాడ్.
ఈ హృదయమే నీ యొక్క మాస్టర్.
Your heart is your master.
Kanukane, follow the master, face the devil, fight to the end, finish the game.
It is in this context it is said,
నీ హృదయాన్ని నీవు అనుసరించినటువంటి వానికి విజయాన్ని సాధిస్తావు, అదే దైవాన్ని అనుసరించమని చెప్పి బోధించటం.
If you follow your own heart, then only you will be able to achieve success and victory. Therefore, follow God.
ఈనాడు పరదేశీయుల యొక్క విముక్తిని మాత్రమే మనం పొందగలిగాము.
We have been able to get freedom from the foreign rulers.
విదేశీయుల యొక్క బంధన మాత్రమే బంధన కాదు, స్వదేశీయుల బంధన కూడా బంధనే.
The bondage is not merely bondage of foreigners, but it could be.
కానీ ఈనాడు మాత్రం మనం స్వతంత్రులమై ఉన్నామా? లేదు.
At least today, are we really independent and free? No.
విదేశీయుల యొక్క బంధం పోయింది కానీ స్వదేశీయుల బంధంలో ఉంటున్నారు.
We have obtained freedom from foreigners, but we have not obtained freedom from our own.
స్వదేశీయుల బంధం నుంచి విముక్తి అయిపోయి స్వబంధం నుంచి కూడా విముక్తి కావాలి.
One should get liberated from the people of our own country, and not merely that, from our own self.
స్వబంధన అనేటువంటిదే సెన్స్, ఈ ఇంద్రియముల యొక్క స్వాధీనంలో ఉండటమే స్వబంధన.
స్వబంధన రెఫర్స్ టు బీయింగ్ అండర్ ద కంట్రోల్ ఆఫ్ సెన్సెస్.
కనుక స్వబంధం నుంచి కూడా విముక్తి అయినప్పుడే అప్పుడు వీడు స్వాతంత్రుడు అవుతాడు.
వెన్ వన్ గెట్స్ ఫ్రీ ఫ్రమ్ ది కంట్రోల్ ఆఫ్ సెన్సెస్, దెన్ ఓన్లీ హీఈస్ ఇండిపెండెంట్ అండ్ ఈజ్ రియలీ ఫ్రీ.
కనుక బాహ్యంగా స్వతంత్రము, అంతర్ముఖంగా స్వాతంత్రము, ఈ రెండింటినీ పొందినటువంటి వాడే నిజమైనటువంటి మానవత్వం.
External independence and internal freedom, these are the essential things for one who is really liberated and who is free.
So that was a short clip of Bhagwan's discourse on Independence Day 1985. And dear listeners, I would really urge you to listen to this entire discourse which we have on our website radiosai.org. In fact, some of the transcript of this discourse, a small excerpt of the transcript of this discourse is there on our website. And you can also download and listen to the entire discourse from our website. In fact, there is no time, otherwise I would have loved to actually play much more chunks from this discourse, because it is so powerful. So clearly Bhagwan has mentioned what is Swatantram.
Hmm.
Isn't that Hari?
Yeah, like that, very briefly he just summarized, like it is the freedom from the senses.
Exactly.
Indriyalu.
Yeah.
And
what comes to mind is how Bhagwan very beautifully used to say the end of wisdom is freedom.
Mm.
And then he used to say the end of knowledge is love.
Love.
And I feel that is what is the summum bonum of all this. You have to cultivate that love. I think once you are in that state of freedom, you will always only see that all-encompassing love, that oneness of all beings. And I think when you start operating from a space which is full of compassion, which is from the space of a pure heart.
Right.
And I think that is when we can really say that we have experienced or we are experiencing freedom. I think we all experience that in small patches, in small fragments, in certain points in time, or certain, you know, the days when we perhaps feel so connected. But I think living there, living in that space is what is experiencing that absolute freedom. And I think once you are connected, you are so empowered. you are connected to a force and source which is so infinite that you can actually do anything. As Vivekananda said, there is nothing that you cannot suffer, there is nothing that you cannot achieve. Mm. So it's really wonderful that we had this concept, some clarity of this concept of freedom. And I think it should be our endeavor, collective endeavor, all of us who have known Swami, who have heard Bhagwan's discourses, it should be our collective endeavors to march towards this Swarajya, this Swatantram, this independence, because that is where and that is when we can experience true freedom. Wonderful. Thank you very much, brothers, for coming over to the studios and participating in this session. It's been really, for myself, definitely an enriching session, and I hope listeners out there would have loved at least some parts of it. Dear listeners, please do take a minute off and write to us. Tell us what you felt about this program. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. If you want to download this program to listen at your convenience, you can do that again from our website, radiosai.org. We'll make the program available for you to download tomorrow. And please do dwell on what we have discussed. Let us fill our lives thinking only about how to connect to that source and how to live a life from a space of pure love. I am Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and it's time now to wind up this session of Thursday Live from the studios of Radio Sai. Thank you so much for being with us all throughout the day. And even as I sign off, you will continue to listen to a program which is the inaugural session of the National Conference on Parenting, which was held in Prashantanilayam on 20th November 2007 in Bhagwan's presence. So do continue to listen to Radio Sai, to tune yourself to the inward Sai, and let us immerse ourselves in His love, in His message, and in His work. Thank you so much. And finally, a sweet goodbye and a loving Sai Ram from all of us in Radio Sai in Prashantanilayam. Sai Ram.